Chapter 9, Standard Deviation. The other fry-up possibilities. Sausages. Sausages are the cafe blind spot. If you're paying £2.50 for a full English, you have to be very wary of the sausage. It's likely to be mostly asbestos and tar. Cheap bacon is still very bacony, and it can still be nice. A cheap sausage is often a thin tube of disaster wrapped in a malicious skin. It can easily go wrong. Tomatoes. I just don't get the fried tomato. There seems to be no pleasure in it. It's just a flavourless balloon of superheated water under immense pressure. I assume fried tomatoes are simply a way for British nuclear fuels to get rid of the water they use to cool fuel rods. They get little red rubbery pods, pump them up with high temperature water, then ship them in special sealed flasks to the cafes of the kingdom. You know those convoys of army trucks you occasionally see trundling down the motorway at a steady 50 miles per hour? They're delivering fried tomatoes to cafes. Mushrooms. Mushrooms are, let's face it, a vegetable. However fried they might be, however meaty they might taste, they're still a vegetable and hence have no place in a man's meal. I don't mean to be sexist when I say that. When I say man, I mean right-thinking person. That's no better, is it? Toast. Firstly, I will concede that toast is delicious, the perfect accompaniment to a good fry-up. But then I will point out that somebody's already written a marvellous book about toast. He's called Nick Parker, and it's called Toast. In there you can learn splendid things like the fact that during the 1930s the Electrical Development Agency promoted toast and the electric breakfast as a way of boosting the use of the national grid during quiet times. Or that toast got put back on the national culinary map during the Second World War as a way to use up old bread. Fried slice. Fried bread is like the devil's toast. It must be very bad for you, all that fat being soaked into the bready sponge. No wonder it's so delicious. But it's where I draw my personal healthiness line. I figure that if I have fried bread as well as everything else, I may as well put ice cream on my bacon and inject sugar directly into my veins. But every now and then, my word, ooh, that fried bread. Black pudding. Black pudding is a stupendous thing, a dense mass of bloody goodness, secret and black, with granular hints of things you don't want to know about. That's probably what gives it its dark power, its demonic allure. We don't know exactly what it's made of, but we suspect that some of it's evil. I'm often tempted by the black pudding, and I sometimes succumb, but it's not something you can find everywhere, so it's not muscled its way into the book. Chapter 11, maybe, or 10. Top 5 Cafe Sounds. Number 1, the distant sound of drilling. There's nothing like the sense that hard manual labour is happening somewhere else to make you appreciate sitting on your arse enjoying a fry-up. Number 2, frying up, obviously. Number 3, that terrifying scream of steam you sometimes get from the espresso machine, as if the Flying Scotsman was trying to excrete all its awesome 20th century power into a tiny Italian cup. Number 4, a badly tuned radio. Ideally something nostalgic and poppy, though the new Piccadilly always used to put the Archers on, which was a splendid idea. Chapter 5. The innocent laughter of tiny children. Outside. Not bothering you in here. Top 5 cafe smells. Number 1. Bacon, obviously. Number 2. Coffee, equally obviously. Ammonia. Less obvious, but it suggests that someone's done some cleaning at some point, which is good. Number 4. A moist Daily Express. Number 5. Cigarette smoke, endlessly recirculated by a creaky old fan. Section 12. 10 a.m. Eternal. My favourite cafe time is about 10 a.m. The breakfast rush is over, but the radio's still blaring away and there's a bit of energy to the place. And it feels like everyone there is skiving in one way or another. There'll be a couple of pensioners reading the paper and chatting. There'll be 3 blokes in high-vis jackets having their morning tea break. There'll be someone doing the Daily Mirror crossword and several people gazing blankly into space. There's always someone who's unmistakably a freelance designer having a furtive coffee. You never have time off when your time's your own. The only hints of stress come from the young woman near the door who's clearly got an interview coming up at the company around the corner, and from the psycho killer in the corner, the mad, muttering man who everyone tries to ignore. This is when a cafe's at its best. You can tune into most of the conversations around you without needing to flap your ears too much. You can nurse a single cup of tea without feeling too guilty, and you can keep reminding yourself that you're not at work either. Hurrah! You have an excuse: funeral, dentist, rabies, meteorite impact, conference. And you can sit and plan the rest of your work-free day. You notice the little things at 10 a.m. Like the door of Lino's near Tottenham Court Road. The door opens inwards and it's been hung so it misses the front counter by just a couple of millimetres. That's precision door hanging. That's making the most of limited space. Or you notice the spellings on the menu in Sky 2. Omelette, O-M-L-E-T, tossed. And particularly, you find time to notice the pictures on the wall, the celebrity endorsements, the signed 8x4s. Bar Remo near Oxford Circus and London's Theatreland is a great place for tracking the hierarchies of celebrity. The walls are festooned with nicely framed and signed celebrity glosses, but there seems to be no celebrity filter, no sense of who's actually famous or more famous or not famous anymore. A random sampling in the Bar Remo includes The Shadows, Graham Norton, Alan Wicker, Ron Moody, Tony Robinson, Tom Courtney, Ray Allen and Lord Charles, and Sophia Loren. Plus, of course, the bloke who played Nick Cotton on EastEnders, someone who might be Michelle Dutrice, if I could remember exactly who she was, and obviously her from Crossroads. I've always wondered about the etiquette of this kind of stuff. Do celebs always carry pictures around with them? Do they offer them to cafe owners when they're on their way up, as a sign they've arrived? Or do cafe owners pester them for pictures? Do you get some sort of discount if you proffer a picture? Could I get my picture up if I just carried one around with "All the Best Russell" already written on it? Then you sit and notice all the peculiar signage that people stick up, the rules and assertions and set breakfasts that people decide are important. This is one of the most compelling and essential things about cafes. They're independent, normally managed by the owners, and they can make their own rules. And they get very particular about the way things are done. The Grindleford Station Cafe is notorious for this. There are hand-scribbled signs everywhere telling you what is and isn't allowed. No coach parties, no dogs, take your pets over here and when they're pots over here when they're done. No, not over there, over here. Don't do this, make sure you do that, don't ask for change, blah blah blah. People can easily take offence at this, but I like the individualism it connotes. Much better than the bland corporate request not to smoke because it impairs the flavour of our coffee, or the regular use of the word patrons. When do you ever hear people referred to as patrons except on signs in cafes? Vecchio's Snack Bar in Llandudno has a similar approach, but you get the sense it's a bit more reactive. Each note is a response to a particular incident. No dogs, no prams or pushchairs. We regret that persons bringing their own food cannot be served. I'm particularly fond of the last one. You can imagine the drama that preceded it. Some holidaying family caught in the Welsh rain decide to have their picnic in Vecchio's and supplement it with a Horlicks or two. Mr. Vecchio takes understandable umbrage at this transgression and dashes off another note in very firm marker pen. I bet that made him feel a lot better. And then, of course, comes the computer. Being savvy business people, cafe owners have embraced the personal computer and are constantly churning out new signage with their printer and occasionally a laminating machine. Thus you find the Hat and Salt Box proudly boasting that they serve real chips. You know what they mean, but you can't help wondering if other places serve imaginary chips, like the Emperor's New Chips. And you get the plethora of set breakfasts at Sky 2 on Hanson Street. Every set menu is accompanied by cute little bits of clip art, sometimes relevant, sometimes not. And a bold uppercase sign states firmly that set menu cannot be changed. Although in my experience, they're completely accommodating to whatever you want to order. But no one has embraced home signage like Gino's near Marylebone Station. The place is festooned with all kinds of signs, saying all kinds of things in all kinds of colours, fonts and sizes. Coloured type, coloured paper, even coloured compliments. Condiments. Gino's entrepreneurial spirit finds expression all around the cafe. I've always wanted to take these cafe habits and import them into my own home. I want to print out a sign saying, "Bedtime is 8 p.m. and this will not be changed." Get it laminated and stick it on my son's bedroom door. Or I'd like to have a little sign saying, "No more than 3 Action Man toys in the fish tank at any one time." My wife would probably like to find some clip art of discarded clothes and make a sign saying, "The laundry basket and the landing floor are not synonymous." That'd be aimed at me. Or my son Arthur could make a sign saying, "No sleeping after 5 a.m. Sorry. I've gone off on a bit of a tangent, haven't I? But that's what it's like to be at a cafe at about 10 a.m. You have time to think, to daydream, to go off on tangents. I can't remember what section this is. They're not numbered anyway, so I don't know why I was going on about numbers. This bit is called Which is the Soup Spoon? The cafe can be an intimidating environment for the novice. Where should one sit? How much do you tip the maitre d'? Which one is the soup spoon? Here's a handy guide to cafe etiquette for all you newcomers. Appropriate volume. If you're slightly posh, you must be as quiet as you can. If you're old and deaf, you should be quiet most of the time, but occasionally very loud. If you're a gang of four blokes in high-vis jackets, you can be loud as you want. Children should mostly be quiet, except when the rest of the cafe goes suddenly quiet, when they should say something like, "Mummy, why does that man have black teeth?" in a loud stage whisper. Banter. One of the best bits about a cafe is the overheard banter, and this is how you should leave it. Overheard. Do not be tempted to join in. You may have a ready riposte which makes Noel Coward look like Noel Edmonds, but keep it to yourself. The only people allowed to banter are the people who've been going there 30 years longer than you. Condiments. Cafe tables are small. You can reach for the condiments for yourself. Don't bother to asking to get them passed. Equally, don't bother the waitress for the brown sauce if there's some on a nearby table. She's only serving you to a certain extent. She's not your slave. Constabulary. The forces of law and order love a good cafe and they tend to go mob-handed. Be polite. They may be eating the same food as you, but they'll still bang you up if you step out of line. Computers. You can play games on your phone, you can bang out a carpet laying estimate on your calculator, but don't get your laptop out. If you want Wi-Fi, go to Starbucks. Cutlery. It may come to you wrapped tightly in a napkin, it may be on some trays up front, it may just get plonked in a pile on the table. All this is acceptable. Elbows. Put them where you like. On the table, behind your head, doesn't matter. If you can though, get something tattooed on one of them, preferably with a biro. Enthusiasm. You may well love cafes. You may think the fittings and the signage and the menus are all exquisite. But don't say so, because you'll be seen as an arse. Feet. You probably shouldn't put your feet on the table, but you may be able to put them on the chair opposite. However, if you do this, you're expected to shift them if a waitress or anyone comes near, making like they were never there in the first place. Fork. If your fork doesn't have tiny flecks of dried egg between the tines, you're entitled to ask for a replacement. Frodo Baggins. Don't talk about Lord of the Rings. Injuries. Many of the best cafes in the country are next to casualty departments of large inner city hospitals. Probably the demand for hot sweet tea and the need to wait around for bad news. For that reason, you'll often notice your fellow patrons are suffering from horrendous and recent injuries. Unless they actually start bleeding in your chips, it's best not to say anything. Mobile phones. Talk on them. Let them ring. Take photos with them. Do what you like. They're part of the reality of modern life, and all that tutting about mobile manners that the chattering classes like to do has got to stop. A particular technique that works well in cafes is the dual audience conversation. You see this happening all the time. While someone is talking to a caller at the end of the line, it's tremendously clear that he has another audience in mind. The audience in the cafe. Could be his table mates, could be the whole cafe. But if you can hear them, you're entitled to earwig. Enjoy the performance. Newspapers. You should bring your own paper. Any newspaper is acceptable, but if it's a broadsheet, everyone will assume you're an arse. If you see a paper you fancy reading, then you should point and mutter at about it. You should point and mutter about it at whoever's nearest. Something like, "Read your paper, mate." Slurping. The Chinese and Japanese slurp their soup to get more air in it and improve the flavour, apparently. If it's good enough for them and their soup, it's good enough for you and your tea. Though slurping gravy from your plate is probably going too far. Smoking. Tricky one, this. The obvious advice is simply to deplore smoking as a dreadful, selfish and anti-lungist activity. It's not big, it's not clever, though it often looks quite cool. But I just can't bring myself to completely believe in no smoking at all in cafes. A little hint of smoke just does something to the atmosphere, something special, especially when so many other places are going smoke-free. The smoke tells you you're somewhere different, somewhere where temporary pleasure is more important than long-term well-being, and where working-class culture hasn't yet been marginalised. Sugar cubes. It is acceptable to let your child build small walls and things with the sugar cubes, but you should make your tip a bit bigger to compensate. Table choice. In a completely empty cafe, you can sit everywhere, though you'll be expected to divine what the best seat in the house is and sit there. The best seat is probably by a window or a fruit machine or the heater. It's probably away from the draft by the door and not on a major waiter route. It may well have newspapers on it. The patina of varnish will be thinner on this most occupied of chairs, but you probably won't be able to tell this until you're sitting down. In a cafe with people in it, you're expected to sit as far away from everyone else as possible without making obvious that that's what you're doing. This is quite a subtle art. If there's only one of you and it's a busy cafe, you're expected to try and find a table for one, or at best two. If you occupy a four-person table when there's a tour available, expect the strongest sanction the redoubtable British bulldog can deliver, strong stares and a barely audible tut. If you can withstand that kind of opprobrium, then you can probably get away with anything. In a very busy cafe, you may be forced into that most perilous and uncomfortable of situations, sharing a table with a stranger. Rule one, don't panic. You can do this if you remember a few simple rules. Firstly, keep eye contact and conversation to an absolute minimum. If you do need to communicate, then do so without using actual words. For instance, you'll probably need to grunt something like, "This is table token," when you sit down. Secondly, as soon as a second person sits down, then that table has a rigid dividing line right down the middle. You may have sprawled out with your paper before, well, not now. Now you have to withdraw to your side of the demarcation line, preferably leaving a demilitarised zone in the middle. If there are no tables at all available, then leave. There's no point just hanging about. Go and find another cafe. There are loads of them. Tea bags. Quite often you'll get your tea brought to you with the tea bag still in it. There may or may not be somewhere to put the bag before you sip. If there's a saucer, use that. If there isn't, then there's no acceptable choice but to put it on the table. Television. Occasionally you'll find a cafe with a telly glaring away silently in the corner, if you're lucky with the subtitling on. Just stare at it mindlessly the whole time you're there. You have no choice. It's television. Final note. If you're a big bloke who's just finished half a day of genuinely hard labour, or a traffic warden who's spent a whole day on her feet, or a pensioner who's just trying to keep warm, none of this is applicable to you. You can do what you like.